Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, October 4th, 2013, and tonight is what we've all been waiting for months and months and months. Comet Ison finally crossed the orbit of Mars, very near the planet Mars, in the last couple days, and over the past week and a half, everything I predicted came to pass in glowing colors. So, and oddly enough, the shutdown of the federal government on October 1st, so all NASA is shut down. Isn't that special? So, I don't know. I gave an interview on John Moore's show yesterday morning, and I just pointed out the coincidence. And you have to understand the incredible amount of fear that the so-called world leaders, the bankers, the secret societies, the people that work in secret to start wars, end wars, manipulate governments all the way down to our own middle management government in this country, they are deathly afraid of comets. And there are many reasons for that, but one of the biggest reasons is if people in mass found out about comets, that they weren't little dirty snowballs, this fairy tale science that's being pawned off on you by NASA, if they found out in mass, the public, you the public, that comets were not dirty snowballs, the next thing you would determine is a number of things. First of all, these things can be big. They're not just little, teeny, harmless puffballs. There can be big ones, and the big ones can cause a lot of damage, action at a distance. And boy, they just don't want to cross that barrier in the outreach programs that try and defend NASA. Boy, they just don't want to even talk about that, that a comet could cause, say, effects on the sun at a distance. The solar flaring could affect Earth. And by the way, before I get going too far, the YouTube videos, there's someone once again posting my name on a YouTube video that takes clips of old shows where I'm quoting a government agency it's in Wormwood, Australia. It's a place that there's some secret laboratories there, you might call them, operational centers. And I'm quoting the, this is back in 2002, where they were basically letting out misinformation. But that's being quoted as if I'm saying it today. And it's totally false information. It posted on September 15th. But this is one of dozens and dozens and dozens of postings out there. And once again, I ask people, don't post with my name or whatever on other web pages. The only thing I permit is the directing people maybe a little one-half sentence comment. McCanny talks about Comet Ison or something, and then direct them to my web page. Here's the problem. On other web pages, it gets mixed with all kinds of other things. And secondly, those quotes get chopped up and moved to other places, and it becomes a mess in terms of people interpreting my work, mixing it with all kinds of other personal religious or other types of doctrine that they believe in, and that's not me. So if you want to do me a favor, don't post on other websites. Don't quote. Don't put in long mouse copied quotes from my web page. Don't do that. That is not helping me. That is not a benefit. Just refer people to my web page. That's all. Okay, but anyway, yeah, the list of misuse of my name and work out there is just phenomenal. But when people do get to my webpage and they realize that the majority of that is government-planted misinformation trying to draw you into, you know, trying to ruin my name and work, basically, then you realize the amount of effort that they're putting into destroying my message. So, okay, that in a nutshell. Just a quick note here. I thought this was humorous. Someone sent this in. They said, what a joke. And this is on Obamacare. There's a place in, I think this is down south someplace, in Nashville. The community, let me pull this up so I can see it a little better. There's an insurance. It's called Community Health Alliance. Tennessee's Obama Health Insurance Co-op is offering free phones. You can get, let me read the phones, because these are not just average little phones here. They are giving away an LG Lucid 2, and then that's a 4G smartphone, and then unlimited talk, text, and 1.2 gigabytes of data. And they're giving that away free if you sign up for the Obama Healthcare Plan under their watchful, under their Community Health Connection Program. Anyway, what a deal. I mean, what an amazingly, this is not a joke, by the way. They would give away a cell phone plan and telephone, 4G telephone, if you sign up. Now, you got to know that somebody's in the workings to make some serious dough here, because they're giving something like that away for free if you sign up. Anyway, it just doesn't get any sillier than that. So anyway, this show will be pretty much dedicated to Comet Ison, because this is such a huge story. Let me put it into perspective. Over 3,500 years ago, probably close to 4,000 years ago now, or possibly even longer, a comet that eventually became the planet Venus had an interaction with the planet Mars. It removed the oceans and atmosphere of Mars, and this is all historically documented from many nations around the world. That was the last time that we saw as Earthlings a comet come that close to a planet. And once again, Comet Ison passed a mere 7 million miles away from the planet Mars. This happened on October 1st. I would note also that all of the NASA orbital pages have not been updated or have been corrupted to give false positions of where Comet Ison is located. During the nearest approach, it came up over the top, like the equivalent of our North Pole. If you take the example of Earth, try and give you an equivalent example, it would be like a comet coming up over our North Pole from the non-sunward side and then heading directly towards the sun, dropping down between us in the sun. And now remember, this is an example, so that you understand what the comet did at the planet Mars. The comet came over the top of Mars, and remember, it did not come near Earth. I just used that as an example, because we have a North Pole and a South Pole. But imagine that Mars spins similarly to Earth and is a water planet, was a water planet before the Venus event. But Comet Ison came up over its North Pole from beyond, and then dropped down in front of the planet Mars as it passed along on its route to the sun. So right now it's between Mars and the sun. And from our vantage point, if you wake up in the morning sky, the moon is no longer a factor. The moon will not come up and rise for a long time. So if you get up like early in the morning, like I imagine around 1 in the morning, Mars is rising off the horizon in the northern hemisphere. And right there by Mars is Comet Ison. It's pretty small, but I'll go through a review of what Comet Ison did over the past week and then explain the physics of each of these. And by the way, I predicted all of this, which, what can I say? You know, I've had decades of experience understanding, watching comets, and seeing what they do and how they interact with other planets, other members of the solar system, etc. And so, anyway, let's start with September 24th, which was actually prior to my previous show. And for reasons, I guess, that I was looking in another direction, I didn't quite see this occurring. The issue with Comet Ison turning green. Now, by the way, these things are very difficult to detect with average equipment, because in the night sky, up to that point, Comet Ison was an extremely small comet. And so the information about Comet Ison turning green came out of the standard press. And also there was a NASA website that posted that Comet Ison had turned green. It appeared on the University of Arizona site, which sponsors the Mars Orbiting Observatory. That's a satellite that's orbiting Mars right now and was taking pictures of Comet Ison. But anyway, that's where that page stopped. I have not seen, up to the airing of this show, there's not been any new postings coming from NASA. NASA had a worldwide observing program for amateurs. That's dead in the water. Have not seen anything regarding that. The images that have been placed, for example, on spaceweather.com, a couple amateur images, very faint, very poor quality photos over the last couple days. There's nothing of decent quality. Now, you have to understand that the NASA equipment, the satellites, the cameras, do not belong to NASA. So in this government shutdown, the cameras, the information from satellites, etc., is still coming in and being processed for Tier 1 science. That's the science that is up and above what you see at NASA, what the visible part of NASA. So that information is obviously being passed up the ladder, and that very much is controlled by New World Order entities. So the real good data is certainly there. It's not being passed to you. And I had a very interesting email that came in. It was forwarded to me from another person who is an amateur, who once was a professional astronomer, but criticizing the use of NASA data, that all of this hoopla about amateurs sending photos to NASA. And he goes, well, clearly NASA has much better photos than amateurs can get. Why do they want pictures from amateurs? Well, see, that's what they can pawn off on you. And that's what's happening. This person's observations are absolutely correct, that amateurs have, some cases, okay equipment, but then it gets filtered through NASA. I noticed that Comet Ison very much has a sunward spike, and has had since the 29th, when it first started, the 29th of September. But none of these pictures show a sunward spike. So we're dealing with extremely poor quality photos, very fuzzy, very few pixels, let's put it that way, in the area of the comet. You see a comet, yeah, it's a comet, but no details. So at any rate, so let's go back. The comet turned green on the 24th of September. Well, I talked at length about comets turning green, luminosity in comets. I spent many, many programs discussing the history of luminosity of comets and how it got swept under the rug at a certain point and that finally got buried in 1996 with the discovery of X-rays in comets. Now, that's another point. Comet Ison, like all comets, is producing X-rays. Clearly, NASA has equipment and is measuring that property of Comet Ison, especially as it passes Mars. None of this data is available to the public. Of the 60 or more instruments of NASA that are satellites, ground-based, and otherwise, of the facilities available to NASA, none of that, absolutely none of that is being reported to the public. And clearly, here's what you would see if you had good equipment. You would see Comet Ison connecting electrically with Mars. Now, Mars is a planet. It's in the solar capacitor, just like all the other planets. And it has the ability to connect to other objects in the solar system, including Jupiter, including Earth, including Venus, although Mars is kind of out there all by itself right now, not aligning with any other items, objects in the solar system. But the reality is that Comet Ison was right behind it on the 24th. Comet Ison turned green because the electrical current passing through the comet was accelerated greatly. Okay, so the 24th Comet Ison turns green, and I said that it would be excited. And so that could mean a number of things. That could be the comet expanded in size. That could mean it, in this case, it turned green. And many of those electrical effects caused by an electrical connection with Mars. Another bit of humor here, the NASA webpage and then spaceweather.com attributed this to ultraviolet light. Well, ultraviolet light from the sun is everywhere. It's not just near Mars. It's not just in a thin line or something like that. Ultraviolet light from the sun is all over, and it's very evenly distributed all over. So what makes the ultraviolet light special when Comet Ison approaches Mars? Well, of course, in Tier 2 fairy tale science, they don't have to answer those questions because nobody can get a word in edgewise. They don't allow questions. They don't allow communication in to spaceweather.com. They don't allow people to point out issues like that. So, and of course, all the NASA web pages are down, so there's no commenting to any of those people. And by the way, when they shut the government down, they also lock the doors. You cannot get back in. If you are a scientist with NASA and say, well, gee, my research is really important to me, I'll go to work and not get paid. I'll go into the laboratory. No, that door is shut. You cannot get in that door, Mr. NASA scientist, or anybody else that works for the government. So it's all shut down. Of the 17,000 employees on that level of NASA, only a couple hundred are there, and that's for kind of like they're probably the people making sure that nobody comes in the door type of people. But very interesting timing on the government shutdown. And could it be a little bit, the powers that be are very, very concerned about Comet Ison. They have an immense program of misinformation in place to move the public away from seeing anything that has to do with Comet Ison. Okay, so the 24th Comet Ison turns green. Now, on the 30th, of September, did I say October? At the 24th of September, Comet Ison turns green. On the 30th of September, Comet Ison develops a sunward spike. This is where kind of all of the government information just kind of hit a brick wall. It did not come out. There was nothing available that I saw on any available websites about even discussing the fact that it developed a sunward spike. And at that point, it would be connected with very definitely with the planet Mars, because within a day, it would be passing above the planet Mars. Okay, now on as far as information is concerned, there was a pretty much a shutdown of information, and I noticed my emails, because we were doing some tests on my email system, lots of stuff coming to me was getting blocked. And so that's very clear. So amateurs were trying to send me information, send emails to communicate, and obviously being blocked. So, but on the 30th of September, Comet Ison develops a spike, and that's something that I've always predicted dealing with comets, that the activity like this, or for example, when we come up to the November 13th, 14th time frame this coming November, the Comet Ison will be right in the back door of the little planet Mercury. And wow, what a time. That is going to be a much bigger event than the Mars passage. I'm predicting that that is going to be an event where clearly the planet Mercury, I'm expecting to go comet. What does go comet mean? It's a term I developed to tell you that as the comet interacts, as Comet Ison interacts with the planet Mercury, Mercury would actually develop a comet tail. So let's come back to the last couple days. Now, Tuesday morning, by the way, I have personally had pristine, absolutely crystal clear night skies where I am. I'm doing my own observing of Comet Ison, and I have very good equipment, and I know how to observe and how to make sure I don't have aberrations in my lens or fog on my lens, or there's other conditions, say clouds or atmospheric conditions, that are contributing to my observations. I have had absolutely cloudless, wall-to-wall, ceiling-to-ceiling, absolutely perfect, pristine viewing conditions where I am. And so I've had very good view of Mars, of the comet. And on October 2nd in the morning, this is now as Comet Ison moved between Mars and the Sun, it as it dropped down in its orbit, moving more between comet between the Sun and Mars. And now remember that the comet tail of Ison is starting to Mars is falling into the area of the comet tail. It was very clear that Mars went comet. A soft halo developed around the planet Mars. On about 3 o'clock, I was observing around 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock in the morning on October 2nd, and very clearly the tail of Comet Ison was connecting to the planet Mars. And so it was kind of you could see the comet, you could see Mars, and you could see the halo around Mars. So Mars literally went comet. And now I've been waiting for other photos to come in, and I've got some connections, I won't say where, but nobody seems to be able to get any photos to me that are after the 29th of September. That's the 28th was the latest professional level photos that I have been able to get my hands on, the 28th of September. And that is before it developed the sunward spike. It was green, and that's before it really connected where Mars became a comet. It developed a comet coma, a slight haze around the planet Mars. And so it appears that the chemicals in the comet tail are carbon monoxide, CO. Arsenic is also another element that can turn green when it fluoresces. And by the way, in reading some of the characteristic colors in green, these are colors that develop around arc welding. You have a carbon rod and you're arc welding and it's actually a greenish light, it takes a high arc welding level of electrical current to produce that color. So isn't that interesting that the color of the comet is the same as the color of arc welding? So Comet Ison affecting the planet Mars to go comet. So there had to be probably a mild, very slight influx of material into the planet Mars. And, of course, the Mars rovers, would they be able to detect this? I would say what they would be able to detect would be the auroras. Now, there's got to be, let's fast forward up to the Hubble Space Telescope, just to give you an idea of the detail that would be available from the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter and the Mars Landers. Now, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter has been able to pick up dust devils on Mars and take pictures of them, very, very clear pictures of large-scale cyclonic activity on the planet Mars. The Hubble Space Telescope has the ability also to focus on Mars and get pristine, absolutely perfect pictures of the Martian atmosphere. So all of this data regarding the auroras on Mars as Comet Ison passes, clearly NASA has all this data in full living color and all the various wavelengths to see the electrical interaction of the comet with Mars. But once again, you, as the public who's paying for all this, will never see a shred of that data. Now, where is Comet Ison today? We're on the fourth. Comet Ison has moved in front of the planet Mars. I personally did not have good viewing conditions this morning. It was complete cloud over, so I didn't get a chance to post this. Now, you may be wondering why I'm not posting my own data on my webpage, and that's because in science you need second and third corroborating evidence. And so if, now, and this is what's happened in the past. Remember when Courtney Brown and Chuck Schrammick printed photos on the Art Bell webpage, and NASA came in and fudged photos to say that the photos that Art Bell was posting were faked. You have to be careful about posting data, and you have to have willing counterparts that have taken good data to put their name on it in from, say, other part of the world and say, yes, this is good data. Because if not, you run the risk of being running the humility machine of NASA. Remember that professional astronomers, Ali Hynaut and crew, Hal Weaver of the observatory in Hawaii, were the ones that faked the photos of Hale-Bopp, removing the companion from their photos and publishing it in the newspapers, slamming the pictures that were printed by Art Bell. We later discovered what they had done and made it public, and remember I gave a many lecture series on this entire epic of Hale-Bopp. At the Hale-Bopp Canary Island Conference, the very first topic on the venue was the companion of Hale-Bopp, and they talked about it openly and the data that was taken. Yet in the newspapers, it was denied that Hale-Bopp had a companion. This is the way science is done today. It's so bizarre. I mean, these people are professional liars. So the point coming back to Comet Ison is my name is being dragged through the mud out there, and they're searching desperately for any shred of some type of activity that would incriminate me or try and use to incriminate me. Okay, I'm going to switch gears just a little bit here now and talk about the solar flare that came off of the sun a number of days ago. It actually, that same morning of October 3rd, the night of October 2nd, the morning of October 3rd, we had auroras, low-latitude auroras, and they were red. These are the powerful ones. These are the auroras that really, when they drop down in latitude, they are there's more energy involved, let me put it that way. But I personally observed these, and they were acting very, very strangely. I have seen auroras for my whole life. I lived in northern latitudes. I've seen them in the south. I am a very well-groomed, seasoned observer of auroras. And I have never seen anything quite like these auroras. They were splotchy. They were like a comet, although, by the way, I want to make it clear, this is not related to Comet Isand affecting Earth directly. What this is related to is as that pulse, that electric EMP, you might call it, pulse, between Comet Isand and the planet Mars occurred, the Sun kicked out a double CME, a very powerful CME. Wasn't the most powerful in the world, but it was very much Earth-directed. And we had some very good auroras. And the the red auroras were viewed in New Zealand and other low latitude in the United States, in the mainland United States. But they were kind of like a circle of light up in the sky. And then a long, kind of a almost like a comet-looking streamer, and then these would slowly move together and merge and become one big ball, so to speak, of light. And that's kind of the way these looked. And I've never quite seen anything like this before. It did not have the traditional aurora looking type of effects like the curtain or the dome, the rays shooting up towards the dome. Did not have any of those traditional aurora looking effects. It looked very different, and to me, it looked. Auroras are very beautiful, but this one looked to me very strange. That's the only word I can tack onto it. Very, very strange. So, Comet Isand action at a distance, but this tells me that when Isand gets up behind Mercury, we are going to see some fireworks, and this is going to be so clearly visible in the early morning sky. Like I say, moonless, no moon effect at all. It's going to be for the whole world to see, and to see the little planet Mercury going comet. Now, when I observed Mars going comet, I had good equipment. I have a big set of binoculars that I use to observe Mars and the comets, and it's much better than a telescope because it draws in so much light and it uses both eyes. It's stereoscopic. And so it's a very bright field of view. Let me give an example. In fact, it's part of my observing program to observe other objects like the Orion Nebula. I have rarely seen the Orion Nebula visually with my eyes so clear with all of the colors in it, which tells me that my Mars observation was very clear. I observed Jupiter with its moons. And Jupiter, by the way, one might think, well, maybe there was some haze on my lens. Maybe there was atmospheric conditions. I observed this for hours and hours in the morning sky, early morning sky, pre-dawn sky, very pristine dark conditions. The moon had not risen yet when I first started observing, and the moon was just a small crescent, and so it was really not a factor in observing at all. But it was, the moon had not really come up when I started my observation, seeing Mars as a comet. And then I looked at other objects, Sirius, the star. I looked at many other bright stars to see if I could see any halo effect in my equipment, and there was none. Mars was the only... Excuse me. Mars was the only object in the sky that produced the halo effect, and of course Comet Isand, out in front of it, was also a comet. It's a typical comet self. So part of my observing program was to not only observe the comet and Mars, but observe many other objects in the sky to make sure my equipment was not faulty, to make sure there was not haze on the lenses, to make sure there was not an effect like internal reflections in the equipment. And I viewed with two different sets of binoculars, slightly smaller 10-power binocular. The ones I was actually looking at Mars as a comet, the good binoculars are 25-power. They're big, heavy binoculars. They weigh about 10 pounds. They sit on a tripod, so it's very stable. And I, like I said, I had literally hours of observing time. And then I observed many other objects to verify that there was no internal issues with my equipment. And so taking pictures with telescopes, for example, my telescope, is very difficult. It's very difficult to get the images correct. There's many other effects with a telescope that affect the quality of the picture, etc. But and then you have to take with various filters, do a lot of processing, and all of that can introduce factors into the observation. So I was much better off looking with my visually at Mars. Very clearly, Mars had a coma around it. As the comet moved by Mars and moved into the sunward side of Mars. So this is truly amazing. At the same time, a couple days earlier, as the comet connected to Mars, we see a solar flare coming off. And remember, I had mentioned this many times before, the only solar flaring we are seeing, the only significant solar flaring we are seeing, is being caused by comets. One comet made a nosedive into the sun before it hit a number of weeks ago. It caused a pretty significant CME. And, of course, NASA is like, oh, just coincidence, for the 180th time, just coincidence that a comet could affect the sun. And, you know, they can't even, it's becoming so obvious that they're wrong, they can't even post their websites to try and put out misinformation, because at a certain point they're going to start to look silly. So what does all of this mean? Well, it means that all of my predictions regarding Comet Ison so far have come true, come remarkably true. By the way, there have not been any updates on any NASA websites for months, in many cases long time ago, that any updates have been posted. Now let's go to the November time frame. As Comet Ison moves into the solar system, it will be visible up in the early morning sky. But remember, Comet Ison is still a small comet. It's not a big raging comet by any stretch of the imagination. There are some people that are predicting that it will fizzle out. And if the nucleus broke up, we might at worst have a number of small comets streaming in towards the sun. But I think it's well developed enough now that it's not simply going to go away. The next stop is the November time frame, so we have to go through all through the month of October with Comet Ison traversing the solar system, and then around the 10th of November, that's the time, in fact even a little earlier, maybe even a week earlier, start looking at Ison for developing a sunward spike or extensive sunward spike, and then also connecting to the planet Mercury. The planet Mercury moves very quickly, so it's going to be around the 10th, the 9th to the 10th, visible up in the morning sky, and then at that point it'll be swinging around, and Comet Ison on the 14th, between the 13th and the 14th of November, that morning is when Comet Ison will be right in the back door of planet Mercury, perfect electrical alignment. It'll be very near the ecliptic. And that's when the little planet Mercury, if Mars went comet now, which it did, just a little bit, planet Mercury might turn into comet Mercury enough to where it would be extremely visible. And remember that's when the NERC planned power outage is supposed to be. It's supposed to be on that date, the 13th and the 14th. So will they shut down the power? Will they do whatever it takes to keep the public from looking at this? But remember, people all over the world, especially in the poorer countries, are going to have, someone somewhere is going to have visibility of this. And a lot of people who live out that are poor people, oddly enough, have a much better understanding of the night sky, of the planets, etc., and this has been historically correct, that they have had a good understanding of the night sky, knew which objects were the planets. This is unlike people who live in the city today. They go out in the country and they go, well, look at all the stars, and they have no idea which ones, the bright ones, are planets or which ones are just bright stars. They have no clue. And this is not true even in underdeveloped countries. Some people have a good understanding of the stars. But at any rate, that November 10th to 14th time frame, very important, and that's when we could start to see some very impulsive activity on the sun. And now look at Mars, Comet Ison. Here we are in late September, the comet affecting the sun, sending out a serious solar flare that causes significant auroras on Earth. Nothing earth-shattering, not something that would take down the power grid. But imagine what could start popping around the November 10th to 14th time frame and then continue as Comet Ison moves in for its dive in around the sun. And I think that's slated towards the end of November. Then Comet Ison would swing around the sun, hopefully maintain its integrity, and that's when it comes out the other side, that's of the sun, when it comes out the other side of the sun, that's when we should be able to see a very good view of just the nucleus of Comet Ison. And remember that when Comet Lovejoy came around and we saw what you would call just the bare nucleus, no tail at all, before it redeveloped a tail, we could see the nucleus in the morning sky bigger than the planet Mercury. And of course, NASA says, a wispy 600 feet across. No, not at all, not by any stretch of the imagination. And then it develops into the biggest comet in history, literally, in terms of the visibility in the sky, etc. So Comet Ison could turn out to be quite the comet. Will it disintegrate? There's a possibility. There's always a possibility that a comet will fizzle. But I'm starting to doubt this, and I'm starting to believe that they're going to do anything possible to dissuade people from looking at this comet. They are very worried about this comet. It just has too many visible things that the public can learn from and understand that these are not dirty snowballs. What are the main effects of learning that? The public would learn that that historically these objects could have affected Earth, and that implies that they could affect us in the future. And also that the world leaders don't have any control over those objects out there, that they're not just harmless little poof balls, and they can affect our future, and so maybe we better start taking care of our own future. The current shutdown of the federal government is very, very strange, and the timing very strange, that none of the information that's coming out of the NASA websites will be available. And I'm guessing that as they bring back the federal government, they will bring back only the portions that tax you, that collect money, or that have a benefit to the federal government. Mind you, there's a lot of programs that are still being funded, and it's very selective. We don't know. I bet you there's some big contractors, military aerospace contractors, who still have their operations running, that their funding is still there just because they have a lot of pull. And all of that feedback loop of money, that they're still operational. So what I'm seeing is a very selective shutdown of the federal government, and then what I anticipate is an even more selective rejuvenation of the federal government. Once it's brought back online, it's going to be brought back in little pieces, all for the savings of money, which is just funny money anyway. It's just all printed or created in a computer. So at any rate, these are very interesting times, and at the heart of it are comets. this is what I find very strange indeed. And so a lot of people, when I was early in my days of criticizing NASA, people would say, how could you criticize NASA? Everything they do is, they're 100% right, their accuracy is, how could you possibly criticize NASA? Now everybody's figuring it out. What was I talking about those decades ago, back in the early 90s, when I was pounding on this and everybody looked at me like I was out of my mind? Now you're starting to see. I knew this back then. I knew it a lot earlier than then. I knew it back in the 1970s when I was at Cornell University. I knew that this was all a big pack of fairy tale mumbo jumbo. But it's now the people are waking up, waking up en masse. How important science is to maintaining world control, and how important it is to pawn off second-degree garbage science onto the public. Okay, I'm going to switch gears just a little bit here. Many people then want to know what should they do. And the answer is the same. You better start taking care of yourself. We have had a hard time keeping up with inventory just because of the ordering that's going on. And like a lot of people, I don't want to be too far advanced in stocking up a lot of inventory, because none of us know the day that things will shut down, where there simply won't be any mail or delivery service, or things like UPS will shut down. I mean, we don't know. So I have to keep things somewhat moderate, and I'm not a giant business by any stretch of the imagination. By the end of the day, things are pretty tight. Anybody who's a talk show host will tell you that. Things are not glowingly, ravingly, amazingly wonderful these days. It's very tight out there. And so, but what would I suggest people do? Get yourself the water filtration system that you need, water storage system, and pre-filters are very important in case of emergency. If you're not in control of your source of water, you may have sludge for water. It might be very impure water. So pre-filtering it is a good idea. The pre-filter and the modular storage filtration system are unique to my website. I've got the plastic water filters. If you need a second water filter for, say, the cabin or another place where you might end up where there's no water filter, that's an inexpensive way of getting a water filtration system. Then there's the stainless steel water filtration systems, all gravity feed. And you can use these every day. In fact, you should be using them every day. And then in case of emergency, you're set. You really don't even change your patterns. One thing I tell people about emergency preparedness, don't wait for an emergency to prepare. Don't wait for an emergency. You should be living preparedness on a daily basis. You should be eating your grains. You should have your dried food. You should be living like this on a daily basis. And by the way, many people ask me, I used to sell flax on my webpage, and like many things, you can just have too many things to kind of keep track of. But I no longer personally sell it, but I don't receive any sponsorship from them. But Flax USA has wonderful products. They're out of North Dakota. Just a free kind of advice to you. Go there. I don't make any money off it. They don't sponsor me. There's no money coming back to me. But flax, the golden organic flax that they sell, is amazing stuff. It's really something you should have in your repertoire of preparedness goods. And so order flax from them. You can get it in either sacks, or you can get it in the plastic jars, like the gallon plastic jars. It's just really something that I think is important. So enough of that. Flax, the golden flax, the company is called Flax USA out of North Dakota. Go there and get some flax for yourself. Like I say, I don't sell it anymore, but it's a wonderful product. I just am somewhat overwhelmed with everything I've already got going on. But flax is something you should definitely have in your repertoire of items for long-term preparedness. And what else? My books, information, all my books, of course, are in ebook format. The CD set, sometimes I almost forget about these. I have so many educational items on my page. The CD set, the 18 hours of lectures of the ancient celestial disasters, a very, very important set of CDs with information, 18 hours of lectures. A lot of people really learning a lot from these items. Okay, enough of the jabber on products on my webpage. But there's no frill there. There's nothing that's just like, I don't sell flashlights. I don't sell emergency widgets and gadgets. It's just the basic things that you really need. And it's like a spare tire in your car. You don't need it until you need it. And then when you need it, it's the only thing that's going to work. There's nothing else that's going to work on your car like a spare tire. And it's particular to your car and your needs, and you better have a spare tire. And you might say, well, gee, I've driven all these years and never had a flat. Well, you don't need the spare tire till you need it. And when you need it, then it's the only thing that's going to work for you. So preparedness is the same. Like I say, preparedness is a little different in that you should be living it on a daily basis. Okay, so I have a couple other kind of personal warnings, and this may be appropriate for some people, it may not be. But one thing I see is there is a huge investment in insurance in this company. People are paying a lot of money for insurance. And what I'm starting to see is insurance is getting more and more that they're just not going to pay. The whole issue with healthcare insurance is a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare descending on this country. But make no mistake about it. It's not about health. It's not about taking care of you. It's about getting you into a government-controlled program to have all your health and body information in the hands of the federal government. What better way to control everybody than to have all your health information? So that's what it's about. It's not about taking care of you. It never was. And whether Hillary was president, and they call it Hillary Care, or whether it would be Billy Care or Bush Care, or all of these people have been pushing this because simply this, owning your bodily information, having control over your body through the medical industry, that everybody's got to take a shot, or everybody's got to stand in a line over here, or the government's going to take care of you in some manner through health care, and then extract the money from your bank account, directly, as you know, there's not going to be any waiting 30 days to pay your bill. You're going to owe that money the day you walk into the doctor's office, and they're going to take the money. Bye-bye money. This is a way of also getting into your bank account. And as a family, as you grow older, somebody is going to be ill. Somebody's going to be sick. Somebody's going to need medical attention, and that's where they're going to take you to the cleaners, because nobody can afford medical care. And as part of your copays, as part of your all of the subsequent debt that you're going to incur, it's going to be just direct drive to your bank account. The problem with insurance is general. It goes across the board for all kinds of other insurance. A lot of expense, premiums going up, companies not paying. I just want to do a little reflection at the end of this show of where we should be. I mean, we all know that the mess of the world that we've got, this is the banker world. This is the banker world model, the maximum use of resources, everybody running around like crazy, paying interest on loans and not having any wealth built up themselves. the country in debt beyond any possible imaginable ability to pay it back. And who do we owe it to? Okay, so anyway, but let's look at what the world should be. The world should be a place in which the original Constitution did something. It created the banking system within our own country that allowed Congress to create money. There would be, in a congressional constitutional republic like was intended, there would be no debt ceiling. There would be no problem with the government spending all of the money. The way that taxation was set up for corporations on revenue was that no taxation on individuals. The taxation was set up so that the corporations would be paying taxes, and you better bet that those corporations would be down the throat of any congressman that wasted a penny of their money, let alone billions and trillions of dollars. There's a reason for setting it up that way, because the corporations have clout, the individual does not. So today it's all backwards. The individual pays and the corporation gets. That's the sad story, that's the sad reality of the way the country is. And so the simple, many times, this country is already in the process of a train wreck. The train is flying over the trestle where there is no bridge. That's going on right now. We do not have a federal government right now. We do not have a federal government right now in the United States. Let me make that perfectly clear. We do not have a government. And it's not going to come back in any form that you're used to seeing. So you have to become your own First Nation. That's a term I developed. You have to live your own democracy. You have to take care of yourself. And the big, shiny semi from FEMA or from the government is not going to pull up in front of your house and with all the goods you need for the next couple years. Not going to happen. We're in for some very rough times coming up here. That's all I can tell you. And be prepared. We're, by the way, set up on the shipping page. We just, on all items, restocked all of our inventory. And we're going to make a special effort of having all orders shipped within a couple days of when they are ordered. Because we have the inventory sitting there. And we're playing it very close to the cards, very close to the chest, you might say. Because I'm expecting that any day things will shut down. Many more things will shut down than what are already shut down. So we have to play the cards very close to the chest. And that's my contribution to you, the people that are ordering and supporting this show through their orders. So at any rate, we'll talk to you next week. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.